And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today is Wednesday, November 30th. We're the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren, Kevin, Gino are all here. You can listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Please like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Send us posts, thoughts, send us questions. Talk to us. We want to hear from you. Today, we're going to talk a lot of football. We're going to take you around the rest of the world of sports, too. Before we even get to the NFL, let's talk about football on a world level. Let's talk about the World Cup. Men's World Cup. The men's team advances to the round of 16. Pulisic with the goal that sends the game, gives America the lead to hang on late. And they are off to face the Netherlands on Saturday. Guys, any World Cup information you want to pass on right now?
Oh, God, hanging on. I don't know if that's really the right way of saying it.
Hanging on for dear life, is that better?
Those last 20 minutes or so of that game were just nerve-wracking. It was incredible to watch. It was just amazing. The Pulisic's goal, he gave, obviously, everything he had to score that goal. Bruised pelvis. That can't feel good.
That was contusion.
Oh, contusion. That's right.
Ouch.
Which just sounds bad. Sorry, Kevin.
Yeah. but big win for US. They were able to advance to the knockout round where they will be taking on the Netherlands on Saturday morning.
Darren? Yeah, I mean, listen, the funny thing is for 60 minutes, the U.S. was the far better side. They dominated the first half of that game. They controlled the ball. Everything was good. Then Pulisic got hurt. He gutted it out to play for the rest of the half, basically, before he went to the hospital. We posted on the Facebook about him saying, "I'm playing Saturday," the whole thing. So it was really cool to see that. The last 30 minutes, the ball goes through, turn his legs a little bit. They clear it. And Turner played well, but the amount of chances the U.S. missed, Tim Weah by himself must have missed four chances. I mean, I'm just saying he was there, and Gino and I were talking off of audio before about how the fact that this team doesn't have a true nine really hurts because they don't have anyone that can put that ball away. And I'll let you make the comment on that, G. But it's the defensively, Carter Vickers scares me a little bit. I'd rather see Zimmerman in there. Just not my guy. And this love affair with Moore, I really want to see Yedlin. He's better. I don't know why we're playing Moore. Moore gives corners for no reason. Nobody's around him. He kicks it to the back. I don't know what he's doing. But yet two games in a row, we go to Moore when Yedlin's the only guy with experience on this team. Get him out there. Come on. A little bit. Just give me a little bit of one guy that's a little tough, that's not afraid, that's going to knock somebody over. Got to play a little physical with these guys on the wings. So Gini Odese is playing great, and his pass was amazing, and it gets overlooked because of Pulisic's goal. But Dest made an amazing pass. I was really pumped up at the way that they came out and scored that goal. They needed it desperately. And like you said, Kev, it was and Gino, both, it was more than just hanging on. It was nail-biter, like at any moment you thought one could get through. G?
Yeah, they are not great attacking, and you see that a lot with this team. You see it with a lot of teams in this tournament right now, but you with America, I feel like most of their really good players are midfielders, and you see it a lot with this team. And listen, not for anything, but they are horrible on corners. I don't know what it is. They're horrible. Can we get a tall guy out there that can head a ball? I mean, they're just horrible on corners. And it was I didn't really think that it was that evident until this game. And on this game, they were horrible. Now, they got the win. They played well. This is a great performance by this team. You know, we'll see as they go up against the Netherlands if they're going to be able to mount give the Netherlands enough trouble. And the other – I will tell you the other thing about this team, though, and you can see it. They are really good the first 55 minutes of this game. And then after that, I feel like they – and it's not just them. It's a lot of teams in this tournament. The guys are completely gassed by the second half. It's probably got to do with the heat somewhat. But you can see the difference. And you get to that 55th minute, and it's like, please start making some subs. Please start making some subs, because you could tell some of these guys are just so gassed. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, what you said is true about being gassed. I mean, and they're playing the late game almost every time. They're playing the game at 10 o'clock at night. They're not even playing during the heart of the day like some of these other places are. But you go through this, when you look at the American teams that when we were younger, their entire offense was getting it into McBride or Ronaldo, like really, and just trying to have them hit headers because all we had was height, but we had no one that could control the ball. Now it's completely the opposite. And then we went to the Donovan and Dempsey type of thing with a little bit more speed and a couple guys with heart. But it's like now we have all this talent, and you're right. And they scored 2 goals in the 3 games. So, Gino, you haven't missed anything in the first 2 games with corners either. I mean, you know, they have 2 goals in 3 games. And that's the thing about soccer. A 1-0 game can be exciting when your team wins it. And when your team loses a 1-0 game, you leave like completely livid because one sneaky goal gets through you, so to speak. But it's been a really topsy-turvy tournament for a lot of elite squads. I found this tournament to be a little bit unpredictable. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Mexico doesn't qualify. You know what I mean? You know, the Denmark, number 10 in the world, doesn't win a game. There's been a lot of things that have gone up and down. Kev?
Those were the two, yeah. You take a look at the groups that have finished so far. Group A, Netherlands, pretty easily got through. Senegal was expected to get through. So the two of them, no issues. Group B, England, we discovered how to win. They took 2 wins and drew the U.S., of course, a 0-0 tie. USA did enough to pull out the win they needed against Iran. Group D, France had it pretty easy. They rested their guys today and pulled out. Actually, they lost to Tunisia 1-0, which was a surprise. But guys like Mbappe and a couple of their other key guys sat most of the game. They came in late to try to see if they could score a goal. But they had it easy. The Socceroos get through also out of that group. The interesting one today was Group C.
It was exciting.
Argentina wins the group. They come back after their opening defeat to Saudi Arabia and win the next two. They win the group easily. Poland and Mexico. With Mexico beating Saudi Arabia today and Poland losing to Argentina, that came down to tiebreaks. And with a 2-0 Argentina and 2-0 Mexico until very, very, very late in that game, we were down to fair play as a tiebreak. But as you're coming down,
7 yellow cards to 4.
Yep.
Mexicans
with a dirtier squad going in. Yeah, we both predicted that they had more yellows.
Let's make sure everybody understands that. The first tie, it's points, and then the second tie break is goal differential. The third tie break is goals scored, and then the fourth tie break is
head to head,
and the fifth tie break is
fair play.
And what is fair play?
You lose points for every yellow or red card you accumulate during the tournament.
That's it.
It's only happened once before. Japan and I forget who the other team was, but they came down to fair play, I think, in 2018.
To be honest, and I didn't even realize fair play until today. It obviously happened before. I just did not know it.
And if it gets past there, it's drawing lots.
Yep.
It's freaking crazy, man. I'm just saying it was, but you know what? It's the world stage. It's really kind of cool. It's a lot of fun. Ecuador actually did a decent job for themselves. CONCACAF, the only team that'll go through most likely is the U.S. Germany may not get through. You know, they have to win. Spain should get through. Belgium right now, number 2 in the world. Right now they're on the outside looking in. They're going to have to beat Croatia to get in. That's no easy match. So there's a lot out there. I mean, Switzerland, who's a decent squad, they may not get through. So there's a lot of teams that are bunched up together. And I found it really impressive that the Northern African teams and the Middle Eastern teams all fared pretty well, coming up with a win no one expected. Saudi Arabia getting their win. Tunisia got theirs today, even though they were playing against a little bit of a lesser squad. You know, Morocco looks like they're in good shape to qualify. You know, Iran, I know they had a weird call against the Wales goalie, which kind of put that game out of reach. But, you know, all these squads played really well. There was no, like, real embarrassing thing. And then you look at Costa Rica, who we made fun of last week, losing 7-0. And then they come back and win the next game. They even took 4 shots, and one of them was on net that went in. And yeah. And they won 1-0. So they have a shot to qualify if they win again. It's very very topsy-turvy, this tournament so far. And it might be just where they're playing, the weather, all that stuff. But the Northern African and Middle Eastern teams have really fared well.
Yeah, Group E, Group F are very much up for grabs.
Mm-hmm.
The only team eliminated from those two groups is Canada. They're 0-2. Everybody else is still alive. Even first place is undecided right now. Spain and Croatia. Well, Spain leads Group E, and Croatia and Morocco are tied for Group F's lead. But Belgium is right there with 3 points. Looking ahead to Friday's games, Brazil in Group G, Portugal in Group H are through. Switzerland and Ghana are in good shape. We'll see what happens, though.
Anything can happen. Anything can happen in this tournament. It's been crazy. But, yeah, I've enjoyed it. What we're going to do, and Kev, you pointed out before, is every day we're going to put up on Facebook who we pick to win the games as we go forward, because it's very hard when we do the show once a week when the entire bracket isn't set to tell you who we predict. But we will give you who we like, and we will tell you who we think is going to go all the way through to the end.
Okay, let's get to some American football now. Last week, week 12 is over. The Jets had a huge win. They beat Chicago 31-10. They moved to 7-4. Mike White takes over as quarterback, 315 yards passing with 3 touchdowns. The Jets had 466 yards to Chicago's 292. They were up 17-10 at the half. They scored 14 in the third. Chicago had nothing in the second half, put 0 points up. It's a good win for the Jets. Takes a little sting off from the week before. They're back on track. Kev, what do you got?
After two drives, I was saying, how the hell are we losing to this team? Bears went up 10-7. They put up two drives, 71 yards each. One was a touchdown, one was a field goal. I wonder how much played into it the fact that whether it was Simeon or Peterman didn't really matter. How much of it was a Jet defense? Not really sure how Chicago's offense would operate for the first drive or two. Bears all year, you got to remember, new coaching staff, new offensive coordinator. They've been using Justin Fields. It's been a running offense, quarterback running a lot. And now all of a sudden you're back to a pro-style offense with Simeon more of a drop-back passer. Did it take the Jets a drive or two to understand how Chicago's offense was going to work that day? The rest of the game, the other 8 drives, they gave up only 150 yards. So whatever they adjusted worked. Offensively, they took advantage of a bad defense. And once Jackson went down with the injury, felt like that was their best defender. And the Jets pulled away, won very comfortably for a change, and sets up for challenging next 2 weeks on the road. Darren?
Well, for me, the defense, my big issue is they missed a lot of tackles. It wasn't even as much as that they weren't in position. I just thought that the last couple weeks, even against the Patriots, they were able to get down the field. They were able to always bend and not break, but a lot of it was because of missed tackles. It wasn't really because they weren't in position to make plays a lot. So it's something we got to clean up. This week is an exciting one against Minnesota, but to recap last week's game, offensively, everybody's on the Mike White, like, for president type thing now, and I just want to see him play against a good defense because he had that great game against the Bengals, and then he became Mike White, who can turn the ball over. And listen, I hope he's great, but let's just hold our horses, and let's see how he does as we go forward. Kev?
Yeah, he did a great job of taking what the defense gave him, got the ball out quick when he needed to, and a couple of times looked downfield, nothing was open. He dumped it off pretty quickly and took the check down. Didn't really try to force anything, which was such a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, it was kind of cool in the fact that he knew what to do with the ball right away. He knew that he could go underneath with it. And, you know, he got Elijah Moore involved, who had a great year last year and obviously has skills. I mean, Garrett Wilson's second touchdown, Eddie Jackson got injured, couldn't move. That was why we scored the second touchdown. First one was really good. You know, Zonovan Knight took over as running back. Healthy scratch, James Robinson. Healthy scratch. Not hurt.
Decided to go with the kid.
Decided, a little hockey term, but yeah, healthy scratch. Decided to go with the kid. The kid looked pretty good. Ty Johnson always does a nice job when they put him in. He's never going to be a star, but he's nice. And now that Carter's a little banged up, we'll see more of Ty. We'll see more of Zonovan and probably see James Robinson back in the fold this week. But, you know, they beat a team they're supposed to beat, and they beat them comfortably. If Fields is in that game, I still think we win the game, but it's a totally different type of game. Mooney got hurt during that game. They didn't even have their best wide receiver weapon. So there's a lot of things that made this game a little bit more comfortable than it should be for the Jets. Listen, I'm a diehard Jets fan, as are you, Kev. Not waiting for the shoe to drop. I think our defense is good. I like our chances this week against Minnesota for a bunch of reasons. But the fact is that this was a game you're supposed to win. So I'm not about to sound the alarm that we're back and we're great. G?
You moved to 7-4. You're the Jets. You moved to 7-4, and that's all you really needed to do at that point.
Yep.
You got the win. You move forward, you know?
Absolutely. Also, 11 guys caught passes last week. Spread the ball around. There are some games where Zach doesn't complete 11 passes. So I was excited with that, and I'm not trying to kill Zach. He's probably still the future of the franchise, at least for another year. But at the same time, he seems very, very quick to not know exactly who to throw the ball to and where all his checks are. And that's something that Mike White can deliver.
Okay, let's move to the three Thanksgiving Day games. Buffalo took care of Detroit 28-25. They moved to 8-3. The night game saw Minnesota take care of New England 33-26. They moved to 9-2. New England moves to 6-5. And then we get to the Giants. They lost to Dallas 28-20. Dallas moves to 8-3. The Giants are 7-3. And, you know, we're seeing the same thing again with the Giants, which is you want to beat the Giants, hold Barkley down, and just stack the line and spy Daniel Jones. And basically that's what the Cowboys did. They have the defense to do it, and they held him down. Barkley only had 39 yards rushing. And Dallas comes away with the victory. Anything on those three Thanksgiving Day games, guys?
Just a couple of quick points. Detroit gave Buffalo all they could handle. Von Miller's injury, he says he's only going to be out a week. It's a meniscus kind of mini tear. We'll see if that's going to be 1 week or two. Jet fans hope it's two. We don't want to face him in week 14, even though we're getting our linemen back a little bit. As far as the Giant game goes, you're right, Gino. Your analysis is perfect. You hold Barkley down, this team can't do anything. CeeDee Lamb is great when given an opportunity. And last week I said that Ezekiel Elliott was done and you had to ride Pollard, and Elliott had the much bigger game than Pollard this week. So therefore it just shows that there are games where Zeke still has it. The Patriots, I don't know if it's them bouncing back or an indictment on the mini defense that they put up 26 points. I don't think that offense is very good. Little surprised they were able to put up 26. Those are just my comments on that. Yeah, Kev.
Just real quick on Detroit, Swift is back. I know I don't think he's fully healthy yet, not totally involved. But when he's a nice change of pace with Williams in the backfield, and they've got Amon-Ra St. Brown back healthy, that's a much different looking offense than it looked a month ago.
But we're going to see this with Detroit, and we've seen it so far as the season goes. They can score 25 with anybody. The problem is they're going to give up 30 with no problem. The defense is bottom tier defense doesn't help the situation. Darren?
When that kid Williams comes back, when Jamison Williams is healthy, who they drafted in the first round this year, that offense is going to be scary good. Now, I don't believe in Goff. You know that. And they're giving up Hockenson to try to load up the defense. Now, basically what they did was they got rid of Hockenson saying, okay, we'll figure out tight end. And we're going to try to just get as many picks as we can to make the defense a little better. They believe in Hutchinson as the first-round pick as someone that could do some damage, and they're going to try to build around him a little bit. The cornerback, Okuda, when healthy, is good, but he's never healthy. But you're right, G. This is a team that's going to give up 31 a week. This is what it's going to be.
Yeah.
The offense is going to be scary when Williams comes back, when he comes in, actually, I should say.
Yeah.
Okay, before we get to some analysis, I'll go through a couple of teams that just – They just ran away with some wins. Kansas City beats the Rams. They move to 9-2. San Francisco, they beat New Orleans, shut them out, 13-0. They move to 7-4. Philadelphia comes away with a victory against Green Bay, 40-30. They move to 10-1. Jalen Hurts, 153 yards passing with two touchdowns, 17 for 157 on the ground. Rodgers still looks old, two interceptions. Anything on those three games before we move over to the rest of the slate, guys?
I think that New Orleans game was interesting, and the fact that they got stopped at the one with a fumble. They were inside the 10 three other times. That game looks like it was 13-0 washout. New Orleans actually made that a game. They just couldn't figure out how to punch it in. Just some bad play calling, some bad choices and stuff like that. San Francisco's D is still great, don't get me wrong. But that game, 13-0, very misleading on how that game was played.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and then we get to some of the other games. So the Washington Commanders with a good win against Atlanta. They moved to 7-5. Right now they are the 7 seed. Heinicke is 5-1 since taking over. Kendall Fuller with an interception with under a minute left. He sealed the game for Washington. Then we move over. We're going to move to another game. Jacksonville beats Baltimore 28-27. Baltimore falls to 7-4. Trevor Lawrence, 321-3. 14 seconds left. Jacksonville, a touchdown, and then the two-point conversion for the win. Tucker missed a 67-yarder as time expires, and they take over that game. Anything on those games, Kev?
And he was mad that he missed it.
He was mad, yeah.
He wasn't short by much. He would have been good from 64, I think.
Yeah.
He didn't miss by much.
Real ballsy call he had to go for two there, but when you're the underdog and you've got a chance to pull out the win there, I think it's the right move. Go for the win.
You were 3-7 to start the game. What do you got to lose at that point? You moved to 4-7 with the win. So Jacksonville moving in the right direction. Lawrence looks good. They played that game without Etienne, so we'll see what happens.
What's interesting, there are four games that came down to go for two or not go for two. Two teams went for two and won. Two teams went for the tie and wound up winning in overtime anyway.
We're going to get to a couple of those now.
It's interesting.
One other game on the slate, I'll get out of the way right now. Miami moved to 8-3 with a 30-15 victory against Houston. They were up 30-0 at the half. The defense held Houston to 210 yards total. And then we get to some of these other games. I'm going to give you one of them right off the bat, Kev, and that's Cleveland 23, Tampa Bay 17. Cleveland is 4-7. Tampa Bay, with the loss, drops to 5-6. And even at 5-6, they still are the NFC South leader at this point. Chubb scored with 19 seconds left in overtime for the win. But here we go with 37 seconds left. Cleveland scored the touchdown, send the game to overtime. Cleveland looking forward to seeing if Deshaun can get on the field next week. Darren, any comments?
The Deshaun Watson thing's interesting. We'll see if he's going to play or not, especially against Houston. You got to love the way the NFL makes these random rulings for that to come out. The kicker on Cleveland's awful. I'm stunned that they went for the tie. He missed his short game. He hit a 60-something yarder to start the season, a 58-yarder, and he's been awful ever since almost. I agree with Kev. I mean, when you're the losing team, play for two. You might as well go for the win. There's really no reason not to. We'll talk about that in college when we get up to that in a little bit as well. It's every team in that South sucks, and every team in that South is in the race. No team is worse than a game and a half out of first place right now. It's that awful a division. The Panthers won for Sam. Thought that was interesting in that division. Atlanta could have won. They're in every game. The Saints, like I said, really gave San Francisco more than it shows. And Tampa Bay blew a lead late.
And let's get to a game with a two-point conversion. The Chargers beat Arizona 25-14. The Chargers moved to 6-5. Herbert, 274-3. They scored a touchdown with 18 seconds left. They go for the two-point conversion for the win. They get it. Anything on that game?
Staley does that.
Yeah,
Staley definitely is one of those ones that does the analytics, believes in analytics, and I think more often than not, we'll go for two there.
Most of the time, we're criticizing him for it. Here, the Chargers are 5-5. They get the victory. They move to 6-5 with the win. They're still hanging around in the AFC. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Staley, when we criticize him, it's not about going for two in a spot like that. No. It's going 4th and 2 at your own 36.
That's it.
You sit there and you give away games because the analytics tell you to. Sometimes your head's got to be a little smarter than a freaking computer program that some idiot's printing out for you. You got to use your head, and you got to know time and place and when to do things. LA Chargers, I should say. They were in San Diego. They actually have a fan base. The LA Chargers have no offensive line. Arizona was killing Herbert pretty much all day. Without Mike Williams, they have no one to throw it up to. Allen made a nice couple of plays there. Eckler's a stud. They have a lot of skill guys, but they don't have that big receiver. And you know what? If it wasn't for Kyler Murray, they don't win that game. Kyler Murray can't do anything. Kyler Murray plays a couple of good drives, and then he's horrible to watch. Him and Kingsbury might be the worst coach quarterback combination I've seen in a long time. Kev,
any worse than Wilson Hackett?
Well, I mean, come on. Wilson Hackett's in a world all by itself, but you can at least say that Russell Wilson's won a Super Bowl.
I know.
And Hackett's father was decent.
Yeah.
Maybe Kotite's father was decent too. We don't know.
Which contract does what looks worse right now, Wilson's or Murray's?
I think it's Wilson's because he's older and you traded a lot for him.
Yeah.
You gave away too much. Not only did you pay him too much, but you gave away too much. Did any of you guys see this coming with Russell Wilson?
No.
Did any of you see him just falling this far apart? I didn't expect it to be this bad.
Pete Carroll did, I guess.
I didn't expect him to be this bad. However, there were a lot of times last year where I was saying, isn't Russell Wilson starting to look old? And I've been saying it. It's kind of the theme with me all year where some of these quarterbacks just look they just look old. I'm not saying they can't play the game. I'm not saying they won't play the game in the future, but they just look old. And Russell Wilson is one of those ones that just looks old out there. He does. He does not move around the way he used to. You're not going to get running yards from him the way you used to on some of those broken plays. It's just not the way he plays anymore. So,
Funny thing with him, is that he was taking a lot of sacks the last couple of years in Seattle.
Yeah.
He hasn't been running that well. He's always been a guy that's been sacked a lot, but he always found a way to have that little winner's look to him. And right there, one of his defensive linemen balled him out.
Yeah,
as he's walking off the field. I mean, you don't see that very often. And, you know, he's just not liked. He wasn't liked in the Seattle locker room. He doesn't seem to be liked in the Denver locker room. So there's something about this kid who's a 4th-round pick and everybody's darling that has fallen on sometimes because John Elway, once again, can't get a quarterback in Denver. He's trying every year. He's nowhere close.
I mean, right now, Seattle's got the number 2 pick from Denver.
Absolutely, they do.
And we're going to actually move to Seattle right now. The Las Vegas Raiders come out with the win 40-34 against Seattle. Las Vegas moves to 4-7. Seattle drops to 6-5. Star of the show for that game was Josh Jacobs. 33 carries for 229 yards and 2 touchdowns. He caught 6 passes for 74 yards. In fact, he had the 86-yard touchdown run in overtime to seal the deal. Anything on this game before we move to the last game on the slate? Darren.
As a Josh Jacobs fantasy owner,
yeah.
I thank thee. you guys know me well enough to know I hate the Raiders. Yeah. And it pains me to draft. I try never to draft a Patriot, Dolphin, or Raider. There are 3 teams I try never to draft. And it pains me, but I had him. And he was a monster in that game. Davante Adams can't be covered. The fact that this team loses as much as they do, it's just a great indictment on Coach McDaniels.
In one of my leagues, I played against Josh Jacobs and lost that game. Not by much, but lost that game, by the way. All right, and the last game on the slate we're going to talk about is Cincinnati with the 20-16 win against Tennessee. Both teams are now 7-4. Burrow threw for 270 yards and a touchdown. Cincinnati held Tennessee to 63 yards on the ground. Cincinnati's going to get Mixon and Jamar Chase back at some point, so they're going to look even better than the way they're looking, except, and Darren, we're going to talk about it again, they just can't – the offensive line cannot guard that quarterback, and it's going to be a problem at some point. Similar to the Giants, held Tennessee's run game down, and you're probably going to come away with a victory. Not easy to hold down Derrick Henry game after game after game, but that seems to be the key to success for these teams against Tennessee. Darren?
So you're a special teams coach, okay? You work on a few things all week. You work on returns. You work on kick blocks. You work on punt coverage. You work on your gunners. This game ended because this team, the Tennessee Titans, doesn't seem to understand the rule that you can't go and push up on the snapper on a field goal attempt. What? How hard is it? You're giving up the three. You held them. You give up the three. You're down seven. You're getting the ball back with a minute to go. Not saying you're going to come down the field and score, but you took your chances away by making a personal foul penalty. There's nothing else to know. You got to be kidding me. Your job on this is to make sure you don't touch that snapper. That's it. That rule's been, and it's not a new rule. It's been in there for a few years now. Come on. Use your freaking head. What do you think? They're not going to see you? What are you kidding me? When the snapper falls down, they know something happened. It's the dumbest thing I've seen all weekend. There's so many stupid plays out there, and that one just blows my mind. They're probably not coming back. They haven't showed the ability to score all day, but you don't even give yourself a chance. I mean, yeah. You know, there's so many things that go on in that game. For it to come down to moronic play by the kick rush team is pathetic. You're not going to block a 22-yard field goal anyway. What are you, stupid? My God. If I was a Titan fan, I would have went through the screen. I expect that to happen to the Jets, not other teams in the NFL. Maybe the Lions. Nobody else.
That was the dumbest way
for a game to end. Sorry, Kev. Go ahead.
If you're down seven and you're desperate to try to block a 22-yarder, maybe you try something to get away with it. But not when you get the ball back with a chance to tie the game, maybe.
Yeah, you send some skinny kid in to hurdle him and try to get in there where he doesn't touch him and gets over the top. You don't send a 300-pound guy in there to tackle him. It's like you have to know one rule.
Yeah.
If I was a Titan fan, I would have killed somebody. That's the most ridiculous way to end a pretty good game. Not a great game, but pretty good, hard hitting. You know, offenses moved the ball, defenses played well. You know, and it ends because a bonehead on the D-line doesn't know what the hell to do. I don't know. It just blew my mind.
So tomorrow's December 1st. We're two-thirds of the way through the NFL season. Right now, as it stands in the AFC, you got Kansas City, Miami, Tennessee, Baltimore, Buffalo, Cincinnati, and the Jets. Knocking on the door is New England and the Chargers at 6-5. In the NFC, you got Philly, Minnesota, San Francisco. You got Tampa Bay, Dallas, the Giants, and Washington. You got Seattle knocking on the door at 6-5. Of course, the NFC South is far from over. Tampa Bay is leading right now at 5-6, but the whole rest of the division theoretically is in it. Atlanta's 5-7. Carolina and New Orleans are 4-8. Anyone puts together a little winning streak out of those four probably winds up winning the NFC South. Do you guys see anything changing with some of these teams? So New England and the Chargers, do we think those guys are going to get in over the seven teams that are on the board right now?
Well, here's the thing. We're going to find out a little bit about the Dolphins the next couple of weeks. You're going to get San Francisco and you're going to get the Chargers, right? Back to back. Not that the Chargers are a great defensive team, but they have some talent on that side of the ball. And you know San Francisco can play D. So we're going to find out if San Francisco can create a blueprint on how you're going to get the Tua or not. We're going to find that out. They're the one team out there that they're going to play that can do that. The Dolphin, schedule down the stretch is rough. So is the Patriots. So is the Jet. All three of them are rough, right? So there's nothing really easy. The Chargers don't have a rough schedule, but they seem to struggle with the Raiders, and that's teams they have to play, stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, with those type teams. Hard to imagine Cincinnati. Indianapolis showed you they're not catching Tennessee. by not being able to beat Pittsburgh at home. And Matt Ryan went from, like, you know, 33 to 55 in like 1 year. He looks like he can't even move. Kev?
And can Jeff Saturday call a timeout?
It's the dumbest thing in the world.
Everybody knows the quarterback takes a sack. Don't you call timeout, get everything set back up?
The one thing you learned about Jeff Saturday, because he was this whole thing, well, you don't need to coach in other levels to become a head coach. Yeah, you do. Little thing you got to learn, G.
NFC playoffs. Who wins the NFC South, guys? Tampa Bay, Atlanta, Carolina, New Orleans.
I got to figure Tampa.
I'm taking the Saints.
Are you?
I don't know why.
I had picked the Saints at the beginning of the year. I honestly think
Tampa.
I think Atlanta's going to wind up. I think Atlanta's going to wind up winning that one.
Losing Pitts for the year, I think, really hurts them again. I mean, you know, today, I mean, that was bad news for Atlanta. Arthur Smith has that team playing hard for a team with no talent and a quarterback that literally can't do anything.
Two of these three teams are going to make the playoffs probably, and that's the Giants, the Commanders, and Seattle Seahawks. Which one doesn't? Darren?
Seattle doesn't.
Kevin?
Giants.
I'm actually going Giants also. I think Seattle's games in the division with the Rams and the Cardinals, I think they're going to get some wins, and I think that's what's going to wind up catapulting them to win that division. So,
you know, Commanders and Giants play each other twice still. So, you know, there's two losses there. Don't know if they're going to split the losses or if one team's going to get two. And like you said, Seattle at least has a couple of easier games in their division.
Well, they were playing the Raiders at home this week and they lost. Just remember that.
True.
And if you can't stop the run and you're going up against anybody, I mean, you know, the Raiders are not the greatest running team of all time. And Josh Jacobs looked like he was Earl Campbell the other day.
A lot of good games coming up for week 13. Bills, Patriots, Vikings, Jets, Washington and the Giants, Eagles, Titans, 49ers, Dolphins, Chiefs, Bengals. We got a lot of good games. Only other game I got of note is if Deshaun comes back against his former team, you'll see the Browns playing the Texans. Any comments on any of these games, guys? Should be a good slate. Darren?
Okay, first and foremost, we have six great games on the schedule, and the Sunday night game is Indianapolis at Dallas. Really? Really? You have six great games on the schedule, and we got to watch the freaking Colts play the Cowboys, and the Colts are not going to be able to block the Cowboys, and this game is going to be, I mean, it might end up being a very close competitive game, but the Colts aren't going anywhere. The fact that they couldn't see this 2 weeks ago is horrible by the NFL. There's too many good teams that were playing that we're going to miss this week because they're going head-to-head against each other. Drives me nuts. Thursday night game's great. You know, you got you kick off with the Pats and the Bills. That's a good matchup. And the Bills banged up without Von Miller and Rousseau and some of these guys in the D-line. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes. And Josh Allen has not looked good the last few weeks. He just has not looked like Josh Allen. You know, just like Lamar Jackson. Hasn't looked like Lamar Jackson to me. But anyway, Kev?
Coming out of their bye, he's got, what did we, four or five red zone interceptions in the last 4 weeks, and he had two in his career previous to that. He's thrown the ball over way too many times in the red zone.
No, I agree. I think he's been less than good, you know, so to speak. Cincinnati, Kansas City is probably the game of the weekend in the fact that it's just the two teams that played each other in the AFC Championship game last year. Cincinnati beat them twice last year. I believe Chase will be back for this one. I have a hunch Mixon might as well. You know, since Kansas City's just going out signing people to their practice squad. You know, they signed Melvin Gordon this week. They signed Brandon Williams this week. So they're trying to, like, load up for the playoff run. But, you know, Kansas City looked kind of pedestrian and boring last week. They beat the Rams, but they didn't do it like where they looked impressive. That's going to be an interesting game. And you talked about it earlier, Washington and the Giants. This is one of those games where – you know, the losers in a little bit of trouble for the playoffs. Let's put it that way. And Miami, San Francisco, I'm curious to see how Tua does against that 49er D. I think that's going to be a really fun game to watch.
Yeah.
And I know they flexed 2 weeks from now, the Dolphins and the Chargers. I wish they would have flexed it this week to see the Dolphins and the Niners because I want to see Tua get hit.
I saw a comment today. Russell Wilson has been so bad he got Pat Mahomes flexed out of Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, how they would not want to have a Mahomes game. That's how bad the Broncos are.
All right, so let's move to
Do you have any comments on this week's games, though? I'm sorry. Did you have any other comments? Okay,
No, I'm good. I'm good. Let's move to some college football. Darren, you want to start us up?
Yeah, let's start in the very exciting week last week and another exciting week this week. College football actually takes the forefront for a couple weeks. Then the NFL kicks back in, and then we get to, like, the playoff and all that stuff. We'll start with the Big Ten. Michigan routed Ohio State on the road. Trailed early. Outscored them 28-3 in the second half. Ohio State had no answer for a Michigan offense that has not been good all year. You know why Michigan won that game? Because they were better on the offensive line, and they were better on the defensive line. And line play still means something in football. And if you can control the line of scrimmage, you will win a lot of games. I thought that that game was going to be in Ohio State. I thought it was going to be close. I was the one that actually said Michigan would cover. I didn't think they'd win. I was a little surprised by that. But, wow, it wasn't even close. Ohio State didn't seem to have an answer in the second half. They had no idea what he was doing. He had no clue how to change the tide. You got to figure the defensive coordinator in Ohio State will be out by the end of this year because you can't lose to Michigan. You can go 11-0. You lose to Michigan, doesn't matter. You had a bad year. Kev, any thoughts on this game?
Yeah, Michigan, like you said, just looked so good in the second half. And then Ohio State, desperation at the end there, last two drives ended in interceptions. Shocking that Michigan won that handily going away.
Yeah, it wasn't really much of a game, and I was surprised by that. We'll stay in the Big Ten just because it's important for this. Iowa has a chance to play in the title game and lays an egg at home against a Nebraska team that had three wins. So it opened the door for Purdue, who is, you know, a nice 7-4 team going in. So they finish 8-4, but they end up winning the West. We've been making fun of the West since the second week of September, and now here it is. Purdue is the team that's in the final. Illinois is the best team in the West, but they slipped up a couple of times. They almost beat Michigan a couple of weeks ago. Would have been a better title game. Instead, we're going to face off of Michigan and Purdue, and we'll get into the pick on that later. Just want to recap the first games earlier. Purdue actually had a big second half and beat Indiana by 14. Kev, I'm going to start off with the SEC because I know you're dying to talk about it. But we're going to start off with the interconference matchup of South Carolina Clemson. Why don't you give us the synopsis on the Gamecocks and the Tigers, Kev?
Oh, what a difference a year makes.
What a difference 3 weeks make.
Oh, 3 weeks, yeah. 3 weeks ago against Florida, the only touchdown they had was Kai Kroger, the punter, throwing the touchdown pass.
Yeah, pretty much. Last week, mediocre Florida team.
Yeah. Last week, 63 against Tennessee. This week, come from behind effort to pull out a 31-30 win over Clemson. First unranked team in 20 years to beat two top 10 teams back-to-back. And South Carolina is now ranked 20th. I thought it was interesting. You look at the last 2 years, South Carolina, Clemson, both years, Clemson put up 30 points. Both years, they rushed for, last year was 265, this year 237. Yulia Galele last year, 9 for 19 for 99. This year, maybe even worse, 8 for 29 for 99 yards.
Maybe even worse. Definitely worse.
The difference, South Carolina went from 0 points to 31 points. Last year, they threw for 206 or 163. They had 206 total. This year, Spencer Rattler throws for 360, and they pile up 400 yards of offense. First quarter, Rattler threw the pick six. Clemson gets another touchdown, 14-0. You're thinking route sign. They got the touchdown, 14-7. Couple punts. One of the key plays in the game, I thought, Rattler gets called for intentional grounding in the end zone. 16-7, they get the free kick. Clemson tries some special teams trickery, winds up fumbling. South Carolina recovers at the 37 and goes in for the touchdown. All of a sudden, instead of being down 16-7, Clemson has the ball, maybe extending the lead. They get the ball right back, get down to 16-14. And from there, the second half, the South Carolina defense played great. Held Clemson to just one touchdown. Second half, Clemson had the ball 8 times, 5 punts, the 1 touchdown, 1 interception, and a fumble on a punt return. So the special teams played a huge role for South Carolina. Beamer ball at its best.
I mean, Clemson's a flawed Clemson team this year, but they led by 9 in the fourth quarter and did not win the game. Up 30-21 in that game. You know, you look at Clemson, they'd won every matchup in this series since 2013, I believe. Yeah. They'd won 40 in a row at home, 41 in a row, something like that. So a lot of things were going against them. Against South Carolina, they found a way to come back and the streak. You know, the Gamecocks stormed back and won. They just outplayed them. That was simply it. Clemson, you know, a little trickery. The quarterback play is not good, not what you're used to at Clemson. And, you know, and Rattler has found his groove a little bit. I mean, he still throws a couple picks a game. That's not going to stop. But but he's throwing for yardage. And a team that looked very, very pedestrian at best offensively, South Carolina, is now a ranked team, 8-4, 4-4 in the league, and they're going to get a good bowl game out of it, and it should help with recruiting going forward.
Well, speaking about recruiting, ESPN ranks their top 40. South Carolina's got the 15th best class.
No, which is the funny thing, and I'm not trying to be funny about this, it might be like the 7th best class in the SEC. I mean, that's the thing about
it. It was either six or seven.
Because all these schools recruit so freaking well with Alabama and LSU and Texas A&M has, I think, number 1 or 2 or something like that. I mean, it's like ridiculous, but it is kind of funny. But I just wanted to get to that. Head-to-head, last week there was a couple of ACC versus SEC matchups, and outside of Florida State, the SEC kind of controlled these matchups. South Carolina won. Kentucky won. I'm blanking on the third one for some strange reason. But I think it was
Georgia.
Oh, Georgia won. Georgia beat Georgia Tech. So 3-1. Florida State held on against Florida. So really, the SEC just showed its dominance against the ACC this week. Just a couple other quick things. Georgia rolled, like we said.
That was 10-7 at halftime.
It was, but they.
But they were the much
Georgia
better team.
Tech was never really a threat.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the game was only 3 points, but Georgia just kind of like, okay, we got to score some points now. And they just started to. And they ended up actually not covering, but coming close. TCU rolled, okay? They didn't let Iowa State in that game. They beat the holy crap out of them real early. 62 points they ran up. You know, TCU was not going to be denied this undefeated regular season.
That game was close. Yeah. That game was close right up until kickoff.
Oh, it was never a battle, man. That was awful. Kansas State's they're going to be their opponent, okay? K-State wins the Sunflower Showdown. They kind of controlled the game for the most part. Kansas played hard, but they always had them down by 10 points. And, you know, Kansas State really doesn't lose to Kansas very much. Just like in basketball, it goes the other way. In football, K-State seems to dominate the Jayhawks. But Kansas will be pretty good going forward. But State against TCU is going to be a rematch of two teams that did play during the regular season, a game that TCU won by 10 at home in Fort Worth. Let's get to the Pac-12 for a minute. I'm going to start off with what I thought was the best game of the day. Oregon State coming back on Oregon. Down 34-17 at home. I know one guy that had Oregon State plus 2.5 to hit a 3-team parlay and thought it was over at the half in the third quarter, down 34-17. But then he celebrated, and that guy was me. But Oregon State in the Civil War, you know, they play power eye, quarterback on the center, old school type football while Oregon's throwing it around. And the injury to Nix is definitely a big, big factor because he can't run. But how many times are you going to go for it on fourth down and miss, Oregon? I mean, at a certain point in time, you got to realize that you're just not making it against this team. They're a little bit more physical than you are. Oregon State storms back. And, you know, I just like the way they play. 38-34, Kev.
Well, what I found interesting was the Oregon State's last three drives were 3 touchdown drives. They covered 36, 2, and 28 yards.
All fourth down, all turnover on downs. Well, the first one was a botched punt. So you can't kill him on that one. But the other two, going for it in your own end, Coach Staley. Yep. And this is what happens. You gave Oregon State the game. And Oregon State held them at the very end.
I was going to say, even with that, Oregon had first and goal at the 5. 3 runs. Yeah. three runs down in the yard, and then they completed
three penalties, and they committed penalties and went backwards a little bit. And yep. There was a lot of stuff that happened in that game. But Oregon State knocks Oregon, we hardly knew ye, from any chance of getting into the playoff. Then you look at Notre Dame, USC. Now, Notre Dame has played well down the stretch. Caleb Williams is the best player in the country, and he's going to be the Heisman Trophy winner, barring some sort of miracle. I mean, you can't put up stats where you throw for over 3,700 yards with 34 touchdowns and three picks and not be a front runner for the freaking Heisman. You know, Notre Dame battles. USC holds them off. Thing about USC, and we're going to get to it when we talk about them against their opponent, their defense is just not that good. They're 91st in the country. That's not what you expect out of a USC team. But I don't think Lincoln Riley cares about defense. He just wants to score more points than you do. The other matchup they'll play is Utah. Utah had Colorado. Colorado sucks. They beat the crap out of them. Washington, who was also playing but lost in the tiebreaker, put up 700 yards of offense at Wazoo in the Apple Cup game. 703 yards offense. And blew them out, but wasn't enough for the tiebreaker. So now Utah will play USC for the second time this year in the Pac-12 title game. And I guess the last one we have to talk about, we covered the Big 12. Oh, is Georgia LSU. LSU, five team in the country, doesn't show up at A&M. A very, very not good Texas A&M squad. An A&M squad that showed no offense all year. An A&M squad that only put up 20 against the horrible UMass squad. Beat the crap out of LSU, Kev.
A&M had lost about five straight games, I think it was, before they beat UMass, that powerhouse. Put up 20 in the process, beating UMass.
Did not cover. It was favored by 33, won by 17.
Yeah.
And it's just A&M, LSU was never really had a hold of this game at all.
And somebody who thought LSU was going to blow him out, that didn't look too good.
Yeah, the two of us did. So there you go. That's why Gino keeps winning every week, and you and I keep finishing 1-2.
Yep.
So that's pretty much a recap of last week's games. Is there anything else you guys wanted to touch on before we go into this week?
Yes. So we look at the rankings. Georgia 1, Michigan 2, TCU 3, USC 4. That's where we stand at the moment.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Only two teams have a chance to climb in, Jake.
And that's what I'm going to ask you. So, and they are?
Ohio State and Alabama.
That's it.
Here's the thing. Ohio State has the one loss. Not a great record, but the one loss. Alabama has two losses. They lost at the gun by three, and they lost on a two-point conversion by one in overtime. So they really have lost two games by 4 points. So as much as this is a down year for Alabama, they've lost two games by a grand total of 4 points. Kev?
Here's the thing with Alabama.
Both on the road, too.
Yep. At Tennessee, at LSU. They're, again, looking at the current standings, they have two wins against teams currently in the top 25. One was at Texas in the game where Ewers got hurt early, and they barely won that game by a point, and they knocked off Mississippi State, who's 25. In fairness, they did play Arkansas or Ole Miss when they were ranked and beat them. They've got two top 25 wins as of for teams right now. Ohio State, another team that only has two wins against top 25 teams, Notre Dame and Penn State, and just a terrible loss by 22 at home. Yes, to the number two team, Michigan, but you can't lose by 22 at home in a rivalry game.
Does anyone outside the six now that we've just named, does anybody else have a shot to move into the playoff scenario?
I don't think so. I don't think Utah. I don't think Utah can, and I think LSU's loss to Texas A&M kills them.
Utah and LSU both have three losses.
Yeah, too many losses.
Can't jump them that high.
Kansas State can't do it either. They also have three losses.
Yep.
So I can't see anybody else really doing it. I mean, to me, you know what? If Georgia loses, they're in anyway, right? If Michigan loses, they're probably in anyway, even though they didn't play anybody. TCU is the susceptible team first because nobody respects the Big 12. I mean, when they beat Oklahoma, everybody thought it was a good win, and then you found out Oklahoma sucked. When you beat Oklahoma State, everybody thought it was a great win. They were 8 in the country. But then you realize Oklahoma State fell apart after that. When they beat Kansas State, you know, they were ranked also. But again, Kansas State doesn't garner the respect of the other teams in the top 10 in this league. So, and this country, I should say. So I don't see TCU could fall out. USC loses to Utah twice. I could see them falling out too. I mean, and what you're saying is true, Kev, about the top 25, but that SEC is such a juggernaut every week.
Oh yeah.
Everybody plays their best game against Alabama, no matter the fact that Georgia's the champ or not. Everybody hates Saban. Everybody wants to beat him. That's just my take on it.
Okay. So four teams in, two teams outside looking in, 2 weeks left.
We'll see. We got four games to discuss this week. We're going to start with Friday night's thriller. Utah goes to USC. Just a couple of stats for you guys before you make your pick. Okay. It's the second matchup. Utah won the opener 43-42, went for two with under a minute to play. Both of these teams can score. USC is favored by 2.5, and the over-under in this one is 69. Just know the first game had 85. Rising has been real good. He's thrown for 2,600 yards for Utah and 22 touchdowns, but Caleb Williams has thrown for 3,700 yards, 34 touchdowns, and only three picks. Utah's defense is much better than USC's, okay? They're 17th nationally against USC, being 91st nationally. So here it is. The spread is 2.5. USC is the favorite. Neutral site game. Kevin, who wins this week? Who covers? Who wins and covers? Got to give me both.
This was probably the hardest of the four games. Knowing what you just said, knowing how good Utah's defense is compared to USC's defense. But I think USC has that little bit of a revenge factor going for them. I take USC to cover and win.
Gino. You know,
I agree. I think this is USC trying to prove to everybody that they belong in here. I think it's USC, and I think they cover.
I hate that all three of us are on the same side. But, yeah, I like USC to win by about 10 in this one. I think it's a close game. I think that they score a late touchdown and win by 10, and I think they do cover. 12 noon Saturday, Big 12, Kansas State versus TCU. Second time these two teams are meeting as well. TCU won the first game in Fort Worth. They won 38-28. Kansas State led 28-10 in the second quarter. Did not score at all in the second half. The Horny Toads are favored by 2.5. Over under 62. Duggan for the year for TCU has thrown for 29 touchdowns and three picks. K-State has had a couple of quarterbacks. Howard is now the guy. Their big thing is they run a 5'4" running back named Deuce Vaughn, who's hard to see. And if you know anything about Kansas State football in the past, reminds you a little bit of Darren Sproles. He's got that same build, same look, same everything, and he runs really, really hard. K-State has the better defense in this one. They only allow giving up 19.4 points a game, one of the top in the country. So, 2.5-point spread. Gino, we'll start with you this time. Who do you like, TCU or K-State?
TCU. I like TCU this week. I like the way they played last week. I think it carries over. I'd like TCU minus the, 2.5?
I have 2.5.
2.5. I'm taking TCU minus the 2.5.
Kevy.
I want to pick TCU. I'm rooting for TCU. My money says Kansas State's going to pull the upset.
They're going to win it outright.
They're going to win it outright.
You know, Darren? This is the toughest game of the weekend. This one is tough because I actually agree with Kevin. I think Kansas State is going to stun TCU and take an undefeated team out of their conference, out of the playoff, and there'll be no Big 12 representation. I think Kansas State wins it by a late field goal, and they win the game in a close one. I think it's going to be 24-21, something like that. Then we go to the 4 o'clock CBS national game, Georgia LSU. This is their first meeting of the year. They did not play earlier. Georgia, 17.5-point choice. Over-under is 51. Georgia has the very best defense in the country. They allow 11 points a game. LSU is very good defensively at 21.5 points a game. Both teams have pretty good balance on offense. Bennett threw for 3,100 yards. Daniels for 2,566. Bennett threw for 16 touchdowns. Daniels for 15. Both teams have good balance, lots of skill, lots of speed. Kev. Georgia, LSU.
Georgia wins this game, but I will take the 17.5 points for LSU. LSU laid an egg last week. Still have no idea how or why that happened. But I think they're up this week. They will give Georgia a game. I can see Georgia winning by 2 touchdowns late. But I think LSU covers the 17.5.
Gee.
I think the LSU carries over to this week from last week. I'm all about this carryover from the week before. I think Georgia wins this game by 20. I'm taking Georgia minus the 17.5.
Gee, I'm joining you in this one. I think Georgia wins this game about 31-10, 31-7. I don't think LSU is able to put up a lot of points on them. I think Brian Kelly will keep it close for about 2.5 quarters, and Georgia will score late like they did to Georgia Tech and get that late cover that way. So we two of us have Georgia over LSU. Finally, the primetime matchup, just what they dreamed of, Purdue-Michigan. Okay, Purdue is more passing friendly. What was that?
Can they flex out of this game?
Oh, I wish they could. Oh, God. Purdue is the passer team, okay? O'Connell threw for 3,100 yards, 22 scores, 11 picks to McCarthy's 2,200, but Michigan runs the ball great. Purdue is 41st in the country in defense. Michigan's third. So Michigan only gives up 12.7 points a game. This is the first matchup of the year of these two. Again, 8-4 versus undefeated 12-0. Spread 17. We'll start with you, G.
I don't see Purdue hanging with Michigan. I think Michigan wins this going away. I'll take Michigan minus the 17.
Kev.
Yeah, I agree with Gino. Purdue is lucky to be there because their division was just so horrible. Michigan wins easy.
I think this game's closer than you guys do. I think Michigan will win. I don't trust Michigan's offense to score a lot of points and lay 17 too often. I think that they'll win this game maybe 31-17, win by 14. I think Purdue covers. But I will take Michigan, and to be honest with you, I'm going to take the under in almost every game this week except for the USC-Utah game because I think that most of these other games are unders this week. And that's the college football story. There are other games that are going on this week, but they're not worth talking about. Nobody's getting anywhere. Clemson blew their chance. North Carolina's been horrible the last 2 weeks. North Carolina State's coach ripped on North Carolina after the win. That was pretty exciting to hear. So a lot of things going on. Kev?
The only other bowl game the only other conference championship, because we don't talk about the American, Tulane-UCF for the American championship. That's big because they're the group of five. Representative probably in the New Year's Six bowl games.
Very true. And was it UCF joins the Big 12 next year, I believe, right?
I can't keep track of everybody's
changes. I believe they join next year as Texas and Oklahoma leave. So UCF will be Tulane does not, but UCF, Cincinnati, I'm trying to remember the four teams. I can't even think of them all. But UCF, Cincinnati, I know are two of them. Houston, and I can't think of the fourth one, but they all joined BYU, that's why, because they're not in any league. They all joined the Big 12 next year, so be interesting to see. But you're right, Tulane will be Tulane-UCF will be an interesting matchup for who gets into the top six, the Super Six Bowls there, so to speak. Gino, back to you.
A little bit of baseball news this week. Jose Abreu signs with the Houston Astros because they obviously didn't need another offensive player.
The rich get richer.
Couple of things just to go through. I didn't actually tell you guys this in advance for a reason, so I'm going to throw it at you now, and that is the Hall of Fame ballot came out for 2023.
Okay.
I'm going to go through the list quickly because there's a lot of names on here that are just not even going to be considered. Bobby Abreu, Bronson Arroyo, Carlos Beltran, Mark Burley, Matt Cain, R.A. Dickey, Jacoby Ellsbury, Andre Ethier, J.J. Hardy, Todd Helton, Torrey Hunter, Jeff Kent, John Lackey, Mike Napoli, Johnny Peralta, Jason Wirth, Jared Weaver, Billy Wagner, Omar Vizquel, Houston Street, Gary Sheffield, Jimmy Rollins, Scott Rowland, Francisco Rodriguez, Andrew Jones, Andy Pettit, Manny Ramirez, and Alex Rodriguez. In reviewing, I don't think Alex Rodriguez is going to get in, although he should. I think the guys that actually have a chance for me, it's Andrew Jones, it's Andy Pettit, Manny Ramirez, and maybe Gary Sheffield. Guys, have anything on any of these guys?
With the way they've dealt with steroids with Bonds and Clemens, I don't see Ramirez getting in either. And Pettit.
It's close.
That's a close one. By numbers, by his postseason numbers especially, he gets in. But again, I don't know if that – yeah, he had that little issue there for with it. So that might keep him out. I think who does get in is Wagner. Kent is an interesting case. He's a miserable SOB. That's why they don't like to vote for him. But you look at his offensive numbers, they're as good as any other second baseman in history. Roland, I know, is a favorite of the sports writers. It looks like he's been getting more and more votes every year. He's near the end of his time on the ballot. They might give it to him. It's not a very strong
ballot
this year.
It is not.
So some of these guys who are borderline are going to have a better chance this year. There's no slam dunk. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, to me, Jeff Kent is the guy that should be in. I feel the same way. I mean, his offensive numbers – I don't care if you like him, you don't like him, whatever the hell. Ty Cobb wasn't liked either. He's in the Hall of Fame. Not that he's Ty Cobb, but you know what I mean. You don't have to be – it's same thing with Albert Bell. The fact that he didn't make it to the Hall of Fame is a joke. Why, because they didn't like him because he was mean? What the hell? Who cares? You know, the guy hit the crap out of the ball. I do agree with Gino that Manny was a Hall of Famer regardless of the roids, but, you know, at the same time, he's not going to get it just because of the way they voted. I'm not as sold on Billy Wagner as you are, Kev. I know he's good. I just don't think he's great. You know, and Scott Rolen, I never felt at any time watching him that he was one of the best third basemen in the game ever. I never felt that way about Rolen ever when I watched him. Thought he was a good player. Wished he was on my team. Never said, wow, that's future Hall of Famer Scott Rolen I'm watching right now. I was watching a decent third baseman.
To me, he's a Don Sutton of third baseman.
Oh, he's an above average third baseman. Speaking
of Albert Bell,
I love Albert Bell.
In addition to that, the contemporary era ballot also is out. It's a 16-member committee. You need 75% to get in. It is made up of 7 former players and 9 other people. The players that get to vote are Chipper Jones, Greg Maddux, Jack Morris, Ryan Sandberg, Lee Smith, Frank Tolleson. And on the other side, you got a couple of executives like Theo Epstein and Artie Marino and Kim Ng. They're all on that list. Here are the guys that are on this list. And this list only means something because it can steroidize, basically. So it's Albert Bell, it's Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Don Mattingly, Fred McGriff, Dale Murphy, Rafael Palmeiro, and Curt Schilling. And it's a 16-member committee. You need 75% to get in.
12 have to go.
I could see any, and I could see all of them getting in if the players decide to vote their other players in.
But there's only 7 of them that get the vote, though. There's 9 against them. You got to remember that.
I know.
9 executives.
Here's the thing. I mean, I'm just going to ask you guys frankly. Did you guys think Albert Bell was a scary hitter as I did? I don't know. I thought
absolutely
he was great.
Absolutely positively. Oh, yeah. Absolutely positively, the guy should be in without even sneezing. He should be in.
I love Mattingly. He shouldn't be in. He didn't play long enough. And I love Mattingly. Oh, man, there's a lot of good players on that list.
There is.
There's a lot of good players on that list. Damn, that's going to be interesting to see how that gets voted on.
And normally the list normally doesn't contain players at this level because this time you have steroid guys that didn't make it on the regular ballot. So your Bonds, your Clemens, you know, they're on this ballot because they didn't make it on the regular ballot. And in the years to come, you're probably going to have more guys. You may see Manny on this ballot. You may see Alex Rodriguez on this ballot. Because as those guys fall off the regular ballot that don't make it in, they're going to make it to this.
I also think Schilling's a Hall of Famer. I don't know why nobody else sees. I hated him. Hated him with a passion. In big games, that guy pitched great. Sorry, he just did.
Yeah.
As good as Pettit was in the postseason, I think Trillium was even better.
It's not even really that close if you look at stats.
Yeah.
I mean, Pettit in today's baseball wouldn't have gone more than 3 1/3. That would have yanked him after he gave up a second walk.
Yeah.
Freaking ridiculous. But you're right.
Fred McGriff should get in just for those Tom Emanski videos.
Fred McGriff was a great hitter, man. He was great. Oh, it's a lot. It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah.
You know what? I mean, since I hadn't seen that list before, I think we should try to rank our guys maybe for – when's that vote happening?
I got to look it up. It's probably within the next couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, if it's not done by next week, I think we should rank our guys in order and see if we get lucky, all three of us.
Okay.
Let's see if we can knock that out. That'd be kind of cool.
The regular Hall of Fame ballots for the just the regular Baseball Writers Association, those are out and they are due by December 31st. So that you still got some time, but the contemporary era ballot, those are the guys. So
okay, interesting. All right, cool.
Before we get to our NFL picks for the week, anything on NHL or NBA you want to go through?
Yeah, we'll do the top fives if you guys have them, right?
Go ahead, Darren.
Well, first off on the NHL, sad news today, Chris Letang. Second stroke of his life. He had one back in 2014, 2015, somewhere around
2014,
there.
2014.
Missed 2 months. Now he's out indefinitely. You hope for the best for him.
Absolutely. Want to give you power five, Kev?
Sure. I think last week I had the same 2-1 and 2. This is splitting hairs. I think I had the Devils 1 and Boston 2 last week, and I don't think there's any reason to change them up. They're both just playing great still. Devils 19-4 overall. They're 10-1 on the road. Very impressive. Boston's half a game better than 19-3, but they're 13-0 at home. Both have won 9 of their last 10. So again, splitting hairs. I had Devils 1, Boston 2 last week. I'm going to keep it that way. 3, another hot team. They're 7-1-2 in their last 10. They've really climbed the standings well the last couple of weeks. I've got the Maple Leafs sitting there at number 3. Vegas, again, a little bit better record than Toronto, but they've been a little hit or miss lately. So I've got Vegas in at number 4. And the Kraken, winners of 6 in a row and 8 of the last 10. I've got them as my 5th.
So, Kev, you and I have the same 5. The only difference is I have Vegas 3 and Toronto 4. So we have the same exact 5.
And the Islanders still 6.
I don't have the Islanders 6th either. Islanders are a top 10 team. I don't have them in the 6th, though. Gee, who do you got? Anybody?
I got New Jersey, Boston, and the Knights 1, 2, 3. I got Toronto 4, and I got Winnipeg at the 5.
They're playing well also.
They are playing well.
NBA, Kev?
And just on the NHL.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know if you guys are a little bit more into it. I know the Rangers have lost 3 in a row. Any thoughts on their losing streak?
They won tonight.
They did? Okay.
I think they won tonight. But, yeah, they are hockey, you're going to have your ebbs and flows depending on where your road trips are, who you're playing at the wrong night, stuff like your goalie's not seeing the puck as well. I never really worry about early season hockey too much. You just don't want to fall too far out of it. They won at Ottawa tonight, 3-1, the Rangers.
Okay.
Toronto won again tonight, just so you guys know also. And Buffalo beat Detroit, another team that's moving up in the standings.
And just to bring them up, Alex Ovechkin broke another record this week. He put in his 402nd and 403rd goal on the road to break Wayne Gretzky's record for that, as he's closing in at 800. Second multi-goal game of the season, 160 of his career, second to only Gretzky. And his 135th game that he's opened the scoring, which is tied for the most in history with Jaromir Jagr.
Wow.
Just one of the things that same game, you know, there's 3 records that Ovechkin keeps climbing up these charts on.
That's crazy.
That's it for hockey for me.
All right. NBA? What do you got, Kev?
Staying with my number 1 team, Red Hot Celtics, 17-4. They are looking so good this year. Tatum has taken that if he wasn't there already, he's taking that step up to superstar level. And he's got the two guy there with him, with Jaylen Brown. So I've got the Suns moving up to two. They've won five in a row. I've got them just inching by the Bucks. Bucks have struggled a little bit lately. They're only 5-5 in their last 10. So I dropped them down to three. Four, I've got Denver on the strength of three in a row going into tonight. And the fifth, I have no clue.
And there we are.
There's six teams within a half a game.
No, exactly. Pick one randomly going into the day.
I'm surprised you do not have the Cavaliers.
Cleveland's playing really well.
That's my fifth. So
I have Boston, Cleveland. I have the Pelicans, who look like they're playing really well lately. I have the Suns 4 and the Bucks 5 right now.
I have Boston, Milwaukee, Phoenix, Denver, Cleveland. Right now, Devin Booker has 51 points through three quarters tonight, just so everybody knows. That Phoenix is playing pretty well again tonight.
And just touch on the locals, and that's one tonight. They all of a sudden are up to 12-11.
Yeah, they're playing well right now.
After a really bad start to the year, they've climbed up back into the playoffs. The Knicks are right on the edge. They are 10-11 and sitting at 10th seed, that play-in game right now.
Yeah, they lost to Milwaukee tonight.
They did, okay. So they're 10-12.
And Boston won again. And I think that's all. Phoenix is up by 25 in the fourth. So they'll win again. You know, certain teams are doing really, really well. That's the way it works.
Lakers still struggling at 7-12.
Yep.
And just want to bring up two guys. Young kid who's improved year after year. He's only 23 years old, fourth year in the league, Luka Doncic.
Yeah.
Averaging 33.5 points a game, 8.8 rebounds, 8.6 assists. The other night had his third 40-point triple-double already this year. You know how many the rest of the league has?
I do not.
Zero.
Here's the thing to remember about Luka Doncic, right? The Kings passed on him and drafted Marvin Bagley second. All right. Then Atlanta drafted Doncic third. Trae Young was fifth. They swapped picks with Dallas. How much does Sacramento and Atlanta? Not that Trae Young has been bad. Trae Young is a very good player.
Yeah,
but Luka Doncic is a special player. It's just unreal.
And Steph Curry is still going strong, 31 points a game. Right now, he's got that 50-40-90 season going. For those who do not know that, that's 50% from field goal range, 40% from three, 90% from the foul line. Only been about eight or ten players who have done that in history. Larry Bird's done it a couple of times. What I was surprised at was Steph has only done it once in his career, 2015, 2016, for such a great shooter.
Takes a lot of shots.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is I feel like as people get older, they don't realize how great Bird was. He's never in the conversation as like one of the, like the elites, and he is amazing. Man's opinion. Durant also had a great line this week. He had 45 points. He only missed five shots. Very efficient. I think he was, 19 for 24 or something like that. Just like one of those games where he didn't miss. There's a good brand of basketball going on right now.
Yep.
G?
Keep it going with basketball. Any college basketball things you want to bring up there?
A couple points. There was some pretty good – Purdue handling Duke was really impressive over the weekend. They beat them, but they beat them pretty good. UConn still undefeated, playing really good ball, as is Creighton. So that's the battle in the Big East right now with those two teams. Virginia's back, number two team in the country. Tony Bennett's got those guys playing well. Iowa State and Maryland are also playing well. But you look at the teams that are playing awful. The Villanova Wildcats are 2-5. Jay Wright steps away, and all of a sudden they can't figure out how to win a game. Florida State, perennial ACC contender, 1-7 on the season right now. Louisville still hasn't won. Cal still hasn't won. Syracuse is under 500. There are some teams that just are not putting it together. And it's, I hate to say it to you, Kev, but your Gamecocks are like now going to fall to 2-4. They're down 23 on the road at GW late in the second half.
But we have we have our women's basketball team.
Yeah, you are the number one team in the country today. You beat UCLA earlier in the week to hold that. But most impressively is the amount of mid-majors that are just beating the crap out of high major teams. For a Florida State and a Villanova to be as bad as they are, Louisville, we've talked about before. Villanova went 0-3 on that trip up to Portland, losing to Portland as well as losing a close game at Oregon, who's also below 500. So there's a lot of and they lost to Michigan State. So there's a lot of question marks about some of these teams. Villanova, who's owned the Big East, doesn't look like they're going to own it for much longer. St. John's also still playing great ball. Any other comments on the NCAAs, guys?
Nope. Let's move to our NFL.
If you're trying to expand your brand overseas, yep, and you create this London Basketball Classic over in London, England, why the hell do you pick Northeastern? I think it was Princeton. I may be wrong there. Army and Manhattan as your four teams.
You don't, actually. Unless these well, are all universities that study abroad and have campuses there and they decide to do something interesting. There's no other reason to do it.
Yeah.
The college basketball brand doesn't need to be grown. It's not gonna.
Oh, no. I know.
It's not gonna grow, guys. It's not. I mean, you still have the coaches that want 96 teams in this tournament. 68's plenty. We don't need to grow it. There's so many games as there is, as it sits already, that you don't need to go any crazier with it. But yeah, I listen. We'll get more into it as college football winds down. We'll be doing more college basketball. Kev's been coming up with more and more tidbits on the NBA, so we'll keep that going. Keep doing more hockey, stuff like that. Again, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren, along with Kevin and Gio. Oh. Kev, you have another point? Oh, yeah, something else to talk about, G. I thought you told me to wind down.
We're going
to
make our NFL picks.
Oh, I forgot the picks. My bad.
No, people need to know what to bet against.
You're right. We did the college ones, which I suck at. I forgot about the NFL. Go ahead, G. Sorry, bud.
So listen, last week, Darren was 1-3. Kevin and I were both 2-3. So let's not undercut that we are being decent, at least lately. And Gino hit the turkey trio, the Buffalo, Dallas, Minnesota money line turkey trio bet at +260 on the money line hit. Let's move to week 13. Kev, want to start us off?
Yeah, I'll be quick here. First game, Seattle laying 7 at the Rams. Rams are awful. And Seattle, I think, is going to bounce back. I have Seattle win. Covering the 7 points on the road. My other two games, I'm taking slight home dogs. Atlanta getting a point versus Pittsburgh. Yeah, they're missing Pitts. Atlanta's been in every game this year. They need a win. They're in the playoff hunt still. So I'll take Atlanta plus a point at home. And the third game, a couple 4-7 teams. Both teams can score. They both have offenses. I'll take Detroit plus 1 at home versus the Jags.
Okay.
Darren?
Okay. I'm going to kick it. You know, I'm torn. I have about 5 games. I'm never right, so it doesn't matter what I'm torn on. We're going to kick it off with San Francisco laying 4 against the Dolphins. I'm taking the Niners to win this game. I don't think Miami's defense is good enough to kind of hold them in check, and I think San Francisco will keep Miami's score down below 24. I think that this is a game that's going to be, I don't know, 27-20, 28-20, something like that. I like Dallas laying 11 against the Colts. I think the Colts suck. The fact that I have to watch this game on Sunday really pisses me off. I think Micah Parsons is going to live in the backfield and make Matt Ryan want to retire right there on the field sometime in the second quarter. Dallas should win this game pretty comfortably. And I'm going to take the New York Football Jets. I have 3.5. Is that where you're at right now? Is it 3, 3.5? I've seen it both ways.
3.5.
I'm taking the Jets. The one area of weakness for the Vikings, besides on the offensive line, is their interior O-line. The tackles are good. The guards and center are not. If Quinnen Williams can control that line of scrimmage, I think the Jets can make this a long day for Kirk Cousins and company. And I'm interested to see how Sauce does up against Jefferson and Reed as well. Even the touchdown he gave up last week, Reed, he was right there. It was just a great catch by Pringle over his helmet. You know, it was like one of those things where he should have knocked it away. I think the Jets are going to pull off the upset. I think they're going to win this game outright. I'll bet a money line as well. So that's my 3. G?
Okay, I'm going right to the Thursday night game. I think Buffalo just takes over against New England. I think they're gonna win by 10, maybe 13. I know New England's been good defensively. I think Buffalo just takes it to them. I like the Bills minus 4.5 as my first game. My second game, I'm taking the Browns. I like Cleveland minus the 6.5 against the Texans. If Deshaun's there, fine. If he's not, that's fine also. I think that they continue to roll. They played good last week. And my third game, I'm taking the Washington Commanders minus the 2.5. I like them. I like them at home. I'm not saying that they're going to win both games against the Giants. I think they win this game against the Giants. Washington minus 2.5 is my third pick. And I got a four-team money line parlay for you guys. It's the Bills, the Ravens, the Chargers, and the Dallas Cowboys. Four-team money line parlay plus 319. And I'm taking the four-team money line parlay. Those are the picks for week 13 of this NFL season. Darren?
One correction for you. Washington's on the road. They're at the Giants, not at home. I don't know if that affects your spread or not. I mean, if it affects your pick or not, because you said you liked them at home. But that game's at the Giants this week.
You're right.
Doesn't matter. You still like them. I get it.
I still like them anyway.
All right. I'm going to try this a second time because the first time I was an idiot and did it before we gave these monstrous picks. I'm Darren along with Kevin and Gino. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Once again, we ask you to like us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, anywhere you catch your social media. Download our podcast. You can download it, anywhere you can download a podcast, any of your Apple products, Spotify, TuneIn. You can find us on Alexa, which I didn't realize you could do that the other day. My wife took a picture of me making fun of me when I realized I could ask for it. Yes, Jake.
And look for our World Cup picks as we start the knockout rounds.
Yep, we're going to be doing them on a daily basis for you guys. Again, make comments, questions, like our stuff, forward our stuff, share our stuff. We want to get it out to as many people as possible. If we're posting something that you think is funny, great. If we post things that you think is useless, tell us. Tell us everything you don't like or do like about the podcast. We enjoy doing it. We hope you enjoy listening. So once again, without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.